Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we got even more NBA on the way tonight here. If some was great with Anthony Davis back, more is better with him getting to go up against the guy that you just heard us loudly complain that should be the MVP of the league in Joel Embiid. We got plenty of that to get to, which I'm Chris. I know you are salivating at the mouth right now, because if you didn't like the two rebounds that Anthony Davis was able to give you in his return against a wounded Brooklyn team, I don't know how this one's going to go against the 76ers, man.
Yeah, I'm going to need for AD to have more than 8 points and 4 blocks and 2 boards in 25 minutes against Joel Embiid. Like, he's going to have to put in work. He's going to have to be somebody that resembles a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in order to slow down what I think should be the front runner for the MVP award. So we'll see how that thing goes. LeBron James is going to have something to say about it as well. He dropped 33 the other night against the Nets, and he doesn't show any signs of slowing down in his pursuit of a scoring title. So we'll see what happens, man. I'm cautiously optimistic about this one. But again, Joel Embiid, even though he doesn't have the supporting cast that a lot of other superstar players around the NBA have, the dude is just playing next level.
It's going to be an interesting stress test for Anthony Davis and this Lakers roster, just his second game back after missing 17. We'll get to more on that, but right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Because, Chris, we had seen all the coaching interviews going on over the last couple of weeks in the NFL. We finally saw some people start to pull the trigger today. And the one that I think, for most people, started the wheels turning was Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers, getting hired to be the next head coach of the Denver Broncos. And while we can certainly have the conversation about Nathaniel Hackett, the bona fides he comes over there with, Chris, what this is really about is the conversation we've been having since last offseason. This immediately invited everybody to start thinking Aaron Rodgers to Denver and how much more likely this becomes. Because, Chris, I want to take you back. Aaron Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, was on with Pat McAfee back on January 11th and had this to say about Nathaniel Hackett and his potential of becoming a head coach.
Yeah, I'm really happy for Nathaniel. I mean, I think this is a little overdue, to be honest. I mean, I think he's been around the game for a long time. What he did in Jacksonville, I think, was pure magic. Getting them within a quarter of the Super Bowl was incredible. He's a great coach. I love spending time with him. He's a fantastic teacher. He's incredible in front of the room. And I'm really happy for him.
So what he was referencing there, Chris, that 2015 to 2018 stint in Jacksonville, where, among other things, he managed to make Blake Bortles at times and stretches look like a decent NFL quarterback here. But you're going to read into this at all, because this is what this has become, is all of us invited to read in and think Aaron Rodgers now lockstep going to Denver.
Gojo, before I can even start to break down what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers as a result of this hire, let's just appreciate the shade that Aaron Rodgers threw at his former teammate Blake Bortles. Because keep in mind, the Green Bay Packers brought Blake Bortles in for a cup of coffee because they didn't know what their quarterback situation was with Aaron Rodgers. So it's just crazy to think that he would shade him in the process of praising Nathaniel Hackett. But in looking at Hackett's resume, I don't know that this is something that's long overdue. That's where I have to disagree with Aaron Rodgers, and I find myself there more often than not. But I don't get it. He's 42 years old, and his claim to fame was the 2017 season where he had a top-five offense with Blake Bortles as his quarterback. But I think that was more of a product of having a dominant defense that was able to create field position and a lot of turnovers. I mean, they basically gifted short field after short field to Blake Bortles. You think about that game that they had in Pittsburgh in the divisional round, that's what ultimately decided the game, that defense being able to create takeaways and actually scores. So I don't know that Nathaniel Hackett is going to be the guy that's going to resurrect the Denver Broncos franchise and take John Elway and company where they want to go. I get the idea of going on the offensive side of the ball, because the last two head coaches that Denver has had have been defensive-minded coaches, Vic Fangio, Vance Joseph. So I understand that. You're talking about a franchise that since week 13 of 2016 has had 10 different starting quarterbacks. That's not a good place to be. So I can understand why they would focus on somebody that's more offensive-minded when they go through their coaching search. I'm just surprised that they landed on Nathaniel Hackett being the guy.
Yeah, and Chris, you wonder if any of this has to do with what we've seen really happen over the last few coaching cycles, right? Everyone trying to get guys that have been in some way, shape, or form connected to that McVay, LaFleur, Shanahan, you know, run and cut offense that we've seen for a large portion of these NFL teams start to become one of the offenses that's extremely popular in the way these things are run. Perhaps that's a part of all this, but Chris, again, I go back to this point surrounding Aaron Rodgers, what they're trying to get accomplished. We've said that team's a quarterback away, and so they thought, all right, the best flypaper for a quarterback is a guy who's worked with one at a high level and a guy who's been a part of one of those offenses. Although Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max earlier this morning and said the Rodgers portion of this isn't why this went down.
The Broncos picked the coach that they believed would be the best fit for their organization, that would be the best move to change their culture. The fact that he knew Aaron Rodgers, that's a cherry on top. Don't get me wrong. It's not, oh boy, it's not nothing key, but I don't believe that's why they went after him, for all the conspiracy theorists, right? Oh, we're going to go hire Hackett and then go get Rodgers. Like, look, they may be thinking that. I wouldn't be surprised. They wanted Rodgers last year, but I don't think that's why they hired Hackett.
Kane and Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. That's Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Chris, I'd say this. While it may not have been done with that as the only reason why, I think it's a massive stock. You know, shouldn't say massive. It is stock up for them in that department if Aaron Rodgers is truly someone that was on your radar. This isn't going to hurt their cause and their pursuit for him.
You see my face? I don't know how much I'm buying into hiring Nathaniel Hackett regardless of what happens with Aaron Rodgers. I just don't see it, man. I'm not saying that this guy is not worth his weight as far as being a coach in the National Football League, but do I see somebody that's transformative in terms of being able to change the culture? No, I don't. I see somebody that was the offensive coordinator with Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, a highly successful young coach who just so happens to be a play caller as well. Like, Matt LaFleur was the one that was sending in the signals, sending in the plays to Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't Nathaniel Hackett. And although Hackett does a great job of being able to break down tape and disseminate information to players, that's something that's far different than the role that he's going to put, the hat that he's going to put on as the head coach of the Denver Broncos, where he has to be the CEO of the entire organization. And I just don't know that he's shown enough throughout his tenure in the National Football League as a coordinator where you have that degree of confidence in him that he's going to have success without Aaron Rodgers following him to Denver, and I'm assuming Devontae Adams as well. I don't see it. I can be proven wrong. This is all going to play itself out, but I feel like there are other qualified candidates out there that would have deserved a look. And so among the candidates that the Denver Broncos interviewed, sure, I guess you could make a case that Hackett was as qualified as any of them, but I do believe they could have casted a wider net and included some other names that have been in hiring cycles before that haven't gotten head coaching jobs that could have been a fit for what they want to do out there in Denver.
Yeah, Chris, I think this is always going to be tough because largely head coaching hires are a crapshoot, right? We don't know how someone's going to take to the leadership portion of things. Dominique Foxworth, our ESPN NFL analyst, has written really well about the fact that we probably need a better way to evaluate head coaching candidates than just based off the work you do as a coordinator, because that's rarely just the job you're going to be doing as a head coach in all of this. But if you want, I mean, even in recent memory, Chris, I'm sure if you're Denver and you want to dream pie in the sky for all this, we know it begins and ends with who you have at quarterback, but Zach Taylor had all the same things said about him leaving Los Angeles and heading over to the Bengals. No one knew who the guy was. Hell, until 6 months ago, I couldn't have picked him out of a lineup here. And now he's a guy that's a Coach of the Year candidate, largely because you happened to draft the transformative talent in Joe Burrow. But if you're Denver, I think that's the charge here too, is we've built this all up to have to go out and finally nail the quarterback thing. And so if you've got a guy from this tree and you've seen that recent results, I'm sure you could talk yourself into have some of that seep in as a reason why you can maybe believe in a spot where, again, ultimately it's always a 50-50 shot with these guys.
No, you're right, but I always believe that the NFL is a relationship business. And so I can't help but think that John Elway made this hire, you know, in large part, due to the relationship that Nathaniel Hackett has with Aaron Rodgers and the potential for Aaron Rodgers to decide to leave Green Bay. If that happens, then Denver would obviously be on the short list of teams that Rodgers would consider, because we know how important it is to have some continuity with the system that you've been operating in for the last 3 years. So it seems like it would make some sense, especially with Rodgers being in the latter portion of his career, his late 30s. He's not trying to overhaul the offense that he's been in. And so it would be a natural fit if you talk, if you're talking about Nathaniel Hackett implementing the same system that Matt LaFleur had in Green Bay. So it makes sense on its face if you get Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback. But if Nathaniel Hackett has to lead the charge in trying to evaluate young signal callers that could be in the draft or guys that would be available in free agency and trying to make that work once again, I'm not confident that the Broncos are going to get the results that they're looking for.
So that's what the Broncos are going to attempt as Nathaniel Hackett, again, the former Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator, now leaving to become their new head coach. But coming up next, Chris talked about it. Last two head coaches for them had been on the defensive side of the ball. They go opposite. How often do we see that happen, and how often does it actually work? We'll take a look at a couple of other prospective candidates and newly hired head coaches to check this out. We will do that after this word from Indeed. Now, guys, in the new year, make the resolution to speed up your hiring process. Check out Indeed. It's the hiring platform that makes it easy and simple to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. Just sponsor a job post, get matched instantly with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed are going to match your job description. Then, you just invite them to apply and you get connected. So there's no more jumping from site to software to cell phone. You manage everything right from your employer dashboard where you can easily schedule virtual interviews. Get it started at Indeed.com/credit.
Matt Eberflus, the Colts defensive coordinator, is the new head coach for the Chicago Bears.
The new general manager, Ryan Poles. Ryan Poles is young and he wanted to work together with somebody else who is young.
I love the hire if he brings an offensive coordinator with him that's very good. And that's the million-dollar question.
I'm looking at this guy right now, and I'm like, you got Justin Fields. Justin Fields is the future of this franchise. Why would you go and hire a defensive coordinator?
Andy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, before we get into some of the philosophical debate about how to go about hiring, I do want to give a quick shout-out to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who right now reportedly are enjoying a stare-down between their current GM and prospective head coach, as there's reports that Byron Leftwich is the guy that they want as a head coach, but Byron Leftwich doesn't want to see Trent Baalke, their current GM, stick around in that role. He'd apparently like to see Adrian Wilson, who spent his last few years as the Cardinals' director and then vice president of pro scouting, obviously a former player himself. It seems like a little bit of a tire fire going on there in Jacksonville while everyone else is starting to sign to the dotted line right now.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a tire fire it is, Gojo. I think this thing is going to happen. I mean, it leaked out a little bit earlier today. I heard from some of my sources that A1 is going to get the job as their general manager, and it's just a matter of plotting the exit strategy for Trent Baalke. And that wouldn't be a surprise that Byron Leftwich would want him out, because we saw what happened with Trent Baalke and Jim Harbaugh out in San Francisco, and we know that Jim Harbaugh is a solid coach no matter what level of football he's at. So it's clear that that Trent Baalke doesn't necessarily play nice in the sandbox when it comes to his coaches. And at some point, you wonder how many different coaches are you going to let your general manager cycle through before you recognize the common denominator in the problem, which would be him. So I think this is going to be Jacksonville overhauling the hierarchy in the organization. And it's about time that Shad Khan faced reality that the pieces that he put in place have failed miserably, and that you need to search outside of the organization in order to find someone, or the individuals, let me put it that way, that can be good stewards of the franchise and, most importantly, develop the most important asset you have, which is Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, we're seeing franchises start to be a little bit more honest with that situation. We talked about some of that with the Giants today. That would be very interesting if Shad Khan would be able to admit that, really clean the slate and get this thing started off on the right foot. But I don't want to gloss over the fact that we had Chris Canty's sources.
Gojo, there you go. Well, I mean, I got my people out here. I got my people out here, Gojo. But let me say this, though. Like, it's just one of those things to me where you try to do something and you realize that it didn't work, and then you recognize that maybe you do need to involve some other football people, get a fresh set of eyes on a situation in order to get it turned around, in order to get it fixed. Jacksonville has been a dysfunctional franchise for as long as I can remember. I mean, since Tom Coughlin left there, it's been cycling through coaches, it's been cycling through general managers, and they really haven't found stable footing with people in the front office, people on the sidelines, or under center at the quarterback spot. If you have somebody in Byron Leftwich that has blood in the ground there in Jacksonville, who the fan base has an affinity for, who has had success with Tom Brady down in Tampa and winning a championship as a play caller, why wouldn't you give him the resources that he needs and the people around him to support him as he develops into a head coach, as he tries to develop your young quarterback? To me, that's just something that makes sense. If he doesn't want to work with Trent Baalke, but you identify him as the guy, then go with that, because Trent Baalke ain't going to be the guy that's developing the quarterback. He's not. So I understand the rumors that are out there, and to me, the direction that they're seemingly going makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, at some point, it's like a relationship. If you're in a relationship with someone and all your friends can't stand that person and your family can't stand that person and you're constantly having to justify their place at the table, maybe at some point you look up and go, huh, maybe I need to look at this relationship that has not borne fruit for me and that everyone else keeps telling me might not be the way to go forward in this situation.
But Mike, here's the thing. Like, Trent Baalke signed off on you hiring Urban Meyer as your head coach. Something that we all knew was going to be a disaster before it even played out. We knew this. That wasn't a surprise to us. When they asked me on First Take this past spring, what do you think about Urban Meyer being the head coach? Well, he hired Chris Doyle, former Iowa strength coach. That's a red flag. He decided that he wanted to sign Tim Tebow from minor league baseball and let him be a reserve tight end. That ended up being a disaster. And then we saw what happened in the regular season after losing to the Bengals on Thursday Night Football. He gets caught up in a bar in Central Ohio getting a lap dance from somebody that claims to be a fan, somebody that's not his wife.
And she was definitely a fan.
Exactly. There you go. But that's what I'm saying. All of these things create noise around your organization. How does that help Trevor Lawrence when he's got to answer questions that following Monday about his head coach? We knew that that was going to be a disaster. So if you're Shad Khan, whoever had a part in signing off on that decision alone should no longer be a part of the organization.
Agreed. Listen, I think that would be the right way to do business. But as we see all the rest of the business going around in the NFL, that certainly looks like a bit of an outlier. But again, Chris Canty saying we think we can look forward to Adrian Wilson getting that job and potentially being the GM alongside of Byron Leftwich, who they have targeted as their head coach. We know we heard Vic Fangio was flown out there, according to Adam Schefter, to get interviewed as well. Chris, we did have a couple more instances where we were given certainty in all of these clouds, though. Matt Eberflus signed as the new head coach for the Chicago Bears, the former Indianapolis Colts D coordinator, who, remember, was a part of the Josh McDaniels bait and switch in Indianapolis. He was the coordinator hired when they thought McDaniels was going to be the head coach. And then once McDaniels pulled out of that, they said, oh, we'll keep him around. And all he's done is build up a defense that's become one of the better, more consistent groups over the last 3 to 4 years in the league. So, Chris, they also go Oppo. Matt Nagy was an offensive coach coming from that Andy Reid tree here. Matt Eberflus, how are we feeling about this hire in Chicago?
I'm feeling pretty damn good about it. I mean, you're talking about him being a defensive coordinator for 5 years, well, 4 years in the National Football League, and 3 of those years having top 10 defenses. So in terms of the pieces that the Chicago Bears have on that side of the ball, I have full confidence that Matt Eberflus is going to be able to take full advantage of what Roquan Smith and company are bringing to the table. I just go back and think about how he developed Darius Leonard, a second-round pick out of South Carolina State, into an all-pro middle linebacker. I'm looking for Roquan Smith to make that kind of jump next year under the tutelage of Matt Eberflus. Of course, the big question is who he's going to hire as his offensive coordinator and what the staff on that side of the ball is going to look at, because you got to develop Justin Fields. And you'd like to have a lot more talent around Justin Fields. You don't have a first-round draft pick because it took a one to move up in last year's draft in order to get him. But I think that's going to be the critical piece moving forward. The coach that they put in place in the quarterback room, the coach that they put in place as the offensive coordinator. And Gojo, I can't help to connect the dots because Ryan Poles is coming from Kansas City. Maybe he makes a run at Mike Kafka, former quarterback in this league, yep, and the quarterback's coach for Pat Mahomes. Maybe he brings him over in order to try to, you know, build an offense around Justin Fields' strength. We see the innovation that Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have had with that Chiefs offense. Maybe they can bring a little bit of that sauce over to the Chicago Bears in a different way than what Matt Nagy brought to the table. So I'm just looking at the situation on his face. I think Eberflus is a solid hire. That organization has been known to play defense. That's their culture. And so I think leaning into that might not necessarily be the worst thing, because with a young quarterback, I get that you want to make sure that you have, you know, a coach that has that orientation. But one of the things that can help a young quarterback develop is a defense that can take a lot of pressure off them in the way of extra possessions and field position.
Yep, we've certainly seen that be a huge help, but we all know now this is going to circle and become kind of commonplace around the league where you've got coaches with a distinction on one side of the football, that hire on the other side, that coordinator job, going to be the most important thing from here on out, because when you are a franchise with your future firmly planted in that young quarterback, that development, like you said, period, end of sentence, going to be the task for Matt Eberflus going forward here. Somewhere in Columbus, Ohio, every Ohio State fan breathes a sigh of relief that the Ryan Day saga and rumors around this job are over and done with. Coming up next, though, let's take a look at the quarterbacks heading into this championship weekend in the NFL. Who's got the most to gain, and the one in particular that has been the source of a lot of consternation as of late? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kane and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're going to take a look at the quarterbacks heading into this weekend because, man, the capes have been out here for one James Garoppolo. It's not enough that the guy can be good-looking, rich, and back in the playoffs again. No, no, no. We got to sing his praises nonstop, too. We'll get to all of that, but, Chris, we like to take care of our teammates around here, right? Like, you know,
yes.
Anytime we're a see something, say something show, right? If one of your teammates is acting out in a way that makes us feel like there might be something going on, we like to check in. We like to make sure that we got a hold of our locker room here.
Yeah, we're not like Kendrick Perkins and J.J. Redick, who didn't have the wherewithal to advise Richard Jefferson to button up his shirt on NBA Today on ESPN a couple of days ago. It was, I think this happened on Tuesday. That was when the offense took place. Like, those guys didn't help their teammates. Sometimes you got to protect your teammate from themselves. And they didn't clearly do that, but that's not how we get down on C&G.
No, exactly here. We don't like to have nipples popping out all over the place, RJ. So in the interest of putting the proverbial nipple back in the shirt on this show, we got to check in. Because during the last break, we talk about hanging on to stuff too long in sports all the time. Our producer, Shannon Penn, is hanging on to content way too long because we're complaining about how various shows have decided to structure their upcoming seasons. And out of nowhere, we're talking about current shows, shows that are relevant, making comebacks. And out of nowhere, Shannon Penn pops in here and goes, yeah, let me tell you what they're doing with The Walking Dead's three-part series finale this season. And immediately, hold up. 10 seasons in to The Walking Dead. Shannon, how did you still stick with this and why?
Excuse me?
Because I'm committed. I'm devoted. I'm not going to give up on my team, no matter how bad they are, no matter how much they want to do a fast forward like 6 years within the show. I'm in it. Started in 2010. What are we in, 2022 now?
Yes.
I'm here now. Like, I'm not getting out. I don't care.
Why not?
Because I'm not a quitter. It's not in my DNA.
Shannon,
I'm not
going to
quit
Shannon.
Until I see Rick Grimes come back.
Shannon, I think you need to let it go.
Whoa, wait.
Let it go, bro.
I mean, my
let
hope is that Rick Grimes comes back at some point before the show is over.
I don't know who you're talking about because, admittedly, I'm not somebody that got into The Walking Dead.
Uh-huh.
But we're talking about it starting in 2010
yep.
and it being 2022.
Yep, still here.
Let it go, bro. They need to TKO that show. It's a wrap. It's over.
I'm what they call day one.
Shannon, you need to know when a good thing is over. Sometimes the party's just over.
Uh-huh.
And the party's over when it comes to The Walking Dead. Let it go. We got plenty of other good content out there
I'm sure.
for you to consume, man.
Yeah, I'm here.
So, I mean, we're talking about Ozarks being in
uh-huh.
season 4, part 1.
Yep.
You can dive into that.
Sure.
We got Cobra Kai out there.
I'm about
There's
that
plenty
life.
Of other shows that you can jump into
uh-huh.
that we can talk about.
Yep.
You don't have to be locked into The Walking
nope.
Dead, bro.
I was just saying, Shannon, you're a Knicks uh-huh. and Giants fan. You got enough pain in your life right now. You don't
Fair
need
point.
This.
And that's to show you exactly why I'm not getting out. Because if I haven't left those two by now, then damn sure I'm not leaving Maggie and the folks. Okay.
Well, Gojo, in his defense, though, I mean, how much Giants and Knicks do you really want to watch? I mean,
that's a fair point.
Probably could watch the latest season of The Walking Dead because those teams are essentially The Walking Dead.
Coral, is Coral still out here somewhere? Like
Coral,
if you make post-apocalyptic content, I am buying it. I watched Station 11 on HBO after a pandemic. Like I have no
ding,
limit
ding, ding.
For how much I want to hurt myself with that content here, Shannon. I'm just a little worried. That being said, now you're going to have to keep us up to date on what is apparently what a three-part series finale.
Yeah, they just dropped the trailer. I think a week and a half ago for the part two of the series finale season. So they're doing a three-part series finale this season, season 11. Yeah.
Excuse me?
Three-part.
Dear God.
Yeah,
now, do you let the episodes build up so you can binge, or you got to watch them every single week?
Oh, no, watch them every single week, and then you watch the post-show, the Talking Dead, with Chris Hartwig afterwards.
They have a post show? What?
Yeah. Chris Hartwig is still making money off this.
Chris Hartwig's like, please stop this.
They got a press conference for the episode? Look, stop yourself.
Chris Hartwig's been hosting The Talking Dead for over a decade. They've got him chained in that room.
Yep.
It's like Scott Hansen. He hasn't peed in a decade. Someone let him out of there. Oh, my God.
Bro, you think you know your teammates, Gojo, and it just goes to show you, man, you have no idea.
You have no idea.
And then I'm afraid of what other skeletons are in that closet. I really am.
And then I watch YouTube Easter egg breakdowns afterwards. Shout out to the homie PT channel.
Oh, my God.
I'm about that life.
Apparently, you know what, for the people that thought appointment television had died, apparently it has come back as the zombie that is this show. This show has become the undead itself, The Walking Dead, somehow still going all this time later here. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty.
What were we supposed to talk about this segment?
You know what?
I don't even remember.
We'll do that coming up in the next segment. We're going to break early here because there is no way to top that, the admission by one of our partners, one of our teammates here, that he is somehow in on this show. 888-SATAN, no, you know, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. I don't need a bunch of Walking Dead calls. You can tweet me if you're still somehow watching this damn show on the CNG Twitter line. And in the meantime, coming up next, we'll get back to who's got the most to gain on championship weekend and one quarterback that's riding off into the sunset. Next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. At Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, do you still watch The Walking Dead? In honor of our producer, Shannon Penn, who has watched all 10 seasons of it now, heading into the final one. This show's devolved into us arguing in the break about who would survive the zombie apocalypse and why. Everyone's strategy and all this. And Chris, we'll be able to ask about survival strategies with teammates in about 10 minutes here. Because Patriots defensive tackle Lawrence Guy going to join the show coming up here in about 10. Your former teammate with the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, we're going to have Vegas on. He's the nominee for the New England Patriots for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. So excited to get into that with him. Also want to talk about the young quarterbacks that he has in his division. Because as a defensive lineman, you keep a book on every single one of those guys, including your own teammates. So really excited to be able to get into that with him as well.
I realized, by the way, because Lawrence Guy jumped out to me when I was in the preseason trying to go ahead and make it with the New Orleans Saints. We played against the Baltimore Ravens, and I remember going out there and trying to block Lawrence Guy, and I realized you were on the other side of that field, too. So for a brief moment in time, I stared down at Chris Canty from the other sideline while he probably had his helmet off with the rest of the starters.
Yeah, just to be clear, I was taking a knee somewhere on the sideline.
Yeah, when
he was
yeah,
out
no.
there. I wasn't getting them reps, dog. I was letting Lawrence Guy get all of the work he wanted in the preseason, which is probably why he's still in the NFL, just knowing that he's getting a lot of quality work. Just saying.
That is true. So we'll talk to Lawrence Guy coming up in about 10 minutes about all of that. But, Chris, as we look around to the quarterbacks heading into this weekend, we've got four remaining here in I think, very different places each in their careers right now. Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers, certainly the quarterback that a lot of people have talked about here. Not anywhere near the passer that the rest of this group is, but still finding his way to postseason success with Kyle Shanahan. You've got certainly Patrick Mahomes at the top of this heap here, Super Bowl champion and MVP. You've got the Joe Burrow, the upstart Cincinnati Bengals, absolute turnaround. And then Matthew Stafford, guy coming over from a long stint with the Detroit Lions, trying to get that monkey off his back. Chris, I give you the pick of those four guys here looking out into championship weekend. Who's got the most to gain from where we sit right now?
Gojo, I think it's Joe Burrow head and shoulders above everybody else. When you look at the other situations, we kind of have an idea of who those guys are. Like Pat Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback in the National Football League. Matt Stafford is at the end of it, and people are questioning whether the lack of success in the postseason had more to do with him being in Detroit versus an indictment on his physical abilities. And with Jimmy Garoppolo, he's a lame duck quarterback. He's just keeping the seat warm for Trey Lance when he's ready to take over in 2022. So we kind of got an idea of where those guys fit in the landscape of quarterbacks in the National Football League. The guy that we're having the hardest time pinpointing is Joe Burrow. And he's probably one of the guys to have the quickest turnaround, not only in terms of his performance from rookie year to his second year, but also in terms of transforming the culture for the franchise that he's played for, knowing how bad the Cincinnati Bengals have been for decades on end. So I would say it would be Joe Burrow has the most to gain. We keep having a conversation about who's going to be Pat Mahomes' rival in the AFC, similar to what we saw with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. And listen, as great as Josh Allen looked last week, I still stand by that guy eventually being Joe Burrow, and he's going to have a chance to go out there and prove it in Arrowhead Stadium this weekend.
Yeah, Chris, I hear you on that, but man, it just feels like he's done so much. Like, to your point, there aren't a lot of superlatives left that we can throw Joe Burrow's way, especially after overcoming 9 sacks a week ago. Matthew Stafford, the reason I would side with him is I know a lot of us, myself included, think that we should stop hassling him after last weekend where he went out and was a reason why. The main reason, one of the big ones, why they won that game against the defending champion Tampa Bay Bucks is, Chris, they have managed to get through this season largely healthier than the majority of their peers. Now, some of that's jumped up lately. They had Taylor Rapp, their safety, miss last week, in addition to Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle. But outside of that leading up, they had been a lot luckier on that front. And you know, in this league, that's a hard thing to bank on going forward. For as tenuous as it looks sometimes, I don't know if I'm counting on them in this field, the teams that we're talking about here, to have as much of a likelihood of getting back again next year, knowing everything that went into it. This is the worst, I think, that Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be in the coming seasons. That's why I think he's still got more runway and has already made up so much ground.
No, you're right. He has more runway than Matt Stafford, but the question is, where does Joe Burrow fit? Not just with the quarterbacks in the AFC, but in the landscape of quarterbacks in the National Football League. Like, people are not going to look at Joe Burrow in the same vein that they look at Josh Allen or Aaron Rodgers or
Pat
Mahomes.
Right. Chris, I don't think coming off this season, he's going to walk into next year as a top 5 quarterback in the NFL?
No. No, I don't. But I think he has an opportunity to prove that this week, depending on how competitive this game is in the AFC Championship game. I think he'll have that opportunity, man, because I think there are some similarities in terms of the trajectory when we look at Joe Burrow versus what Pat Mahomes did. Now, I get it. Joe Burrow played in his rookie year, and Pat set for the majority of his rookie year. But you're talking about both quarterbacks having their team in the AFC Championship game in year two. So I think there is an opportunity to have that type of upward trend for his career and to change the perception of who he is. Because think about it. Halfway through this season, Gojo, people were saying that Justin Herbert was that dude, and that you could split hairs between Justin Herbert and Pat Mahomes. Then Josh Allen made a late season surge based on what he did in the postseason. But Joe Burrow's kind of been under the radar with both of those guys. Like, it's kind of been Josh Allen, we talk about him and the physical attributes. Justin Herbert, how quickly he's ascended as a quarterback. And Joe Burrow just continues to win games, not only in the regular season, but also in the postseason. And now he's in the conference championship game. So I think Joe Burrow has a ton to gain. If he's able to keep this thing close and it's a one-possession game, then I think that automatically vaults him into a top 6 to 8 quarterback in the National Football League. I still don't think people will view him as a top 5 guy, but he will be firmly entrenched as a top 6 to 8 guy, and I think that's a step up based on where he started this season.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I remember Dan Orlovsky going to bat saying Joe Burrow was a top 5 quarterback weeks ago and catching a lot of flack for it. Chris, I agree with him based on this. You and I talked and said, what's the ceiling look like for this team this year for Cincinnati based on some of that roster's limitations? And we both said AFC Championship. Like, they ended up in that spot. They hit the ceiling. I don't know. In my mind, he seems like a made man in all of this heading into this round already. Because, I mean, if we want to do that conversation, Chris, I mean, you could even argue for Patrick Mahomes by that same logic and say, for the conversations we want to put him in, Tom Brady-esque, about what that dynasty could be in Kansas City. Because if you win this year, all of a sudden, you're flirting with dynasty with 2 championships in 3 years, 4 AFC championship games hosted in a row. Patrick Mahomes could start to put himself on that trajectory of all of a sudden, they're back in another Super Bowl and have a chance of winning that thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He could start to get into that conversation, but it's so far out there, the bar that Brady has set for every other quarterback, to try to attribute that kind of longevity and that kind of productivity. I just can't do that. As good as Pat Mahomes is, I don't know that Pat Mahomes is going to play until he's 44 years old and go 22 seasons in. I just don't know that he's going to do that. And then you consider also the coaching situation with Andy Reid getting Pat Mahomes a lot later than Bill Belichick got Tom Brady. I don't know that we can say that. But if he wins another championship, we're talking about one of the dynastic teams in NFL history. Like, they will be in the same vein as what we saw with the 90s Cowboys or what we saw with the 80s 49ers. So they'll be in that conversation as well, Pat Mahomes and what he's done over the course of the last 4 seasons.
rarefied air for that group, no doubt. And a lot of very, really interesting storylines for all these quarterbacks. I know we tend to boil it down to that a little bit too much at times, but a lot of very unique angles heading into conference championship weekend. Coming up next, though, let's talk about another young quarterback in a division full of quarterbacks looking to take that next step in year two with a guy that's had the task of trying to go and hit them often.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.